Welcome to Heritage Breeds, a podcast series that is brought to you by the Livestock Conservancy, an organization involved in protecting nearly 200 breeds of livestock and poultry. This series will introduce you to the animals, breeders, and people working to save them from extinction. Welcome, I'm C.S. Wurzberger, your host, and today we are going back in time to talk about the historic meats our ancestors once enjoyed. Now you may be aware there's a movement to enjoy heirloom vegetables and fruits. Well, now the time has come to make a similar discovery with heritage meats. And joining me to lead this discussion today is Jeff Duba, purveyor of fine heritage meats and owner of Duba & Company. Welcome, Jeff. So glad you can join me today.
Thanks for having me on the show, C.S. Appreciate it.
Now, first, tell us more about heritage meats and the story behind them.
Sure. So heritage meats are meats that are sourced from rare breeds of livestock, and sort of the history behind them is that, you know, as our country shifted from, more of a agrarian-based sourcing for, you know, fruits and vegetables and meats, there was the shift towards factory farming, and that meant that certain breeds of cattle or livestock became undesirable or unsuitable for these new conditions, and so that meant that certain breeds began to become more rare. You know, certain traits like horns or slow growth or performance on pasture just didn't lend themselves to closer quarters of a feedlot or performance on grain and such. And so you start to see the disappearance of breeds wholesale from the face of the earth. And so, as you know, back in 1977, the Livestock Conservancy, at that time was called by a different name, but it was formed to sort of stop or reverse this trend of the disappearance of livestock breeds. So that's where they come from. But
now, how are these products and meats really different from the commercially raised ones?
Well, I think the two main differences that you'll find is first in flavor. They have wonderful flavor. That's the first thing. And secondly, their nutritive value is something to speak of. Higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids, lower levels of omega-6 fatty acids. So there's a real, even in the appearance of the meats themselves, I was talking to a customer a few weeks ago who, for the first time, had bought some heritage meats. It was Highland beef that they had bought, and they bought a quarter of a cow, and they were asking me, I noticed just the look of them is different, that the reds, there's a vibrant red color to the meat, and, something that they had not seen before in conventional meat. And so so even the appearance of them can be quite stunning. And, we got to talking about how that's likely an indicator of nutrient density. It seems that nature has a way of appealing to our eyes as an indicator of just how mineral dense they are, nutrient dense they are.
Well, and I have to admit, when someone first told me that there was going to be a tremendous and an improved difference in the taste of the meat, I honestly didn't believe them at first till, let's see, it would have been last month when we all came together at the Livestock Conservancy's National Conference down in Austin. And of course, they were serving many of these heritage breed meats. I could not believe the difference in what I was tasting. It was incredible. And I especially noticed the difference when I came back home and purchased some of the brands that I have normally been buying for years and went, oh, yuck, there is such a difference. So when I was introduced to you folks, where here you are with your company, delivering right to our door, I was so excited and said, oh my goodness, we've got to interview you folks for this podcast series. But now, share with us, why should people consider serving? I mean, you've talked about the nutritional value, the taste value. Is there anything else that really makes a difference?
Well, yeah, of course. Here's the great irony of heritage meats is that by consuming these rare breeds, you're actually creating a demand for them which in turn indicates the market to produce more, and that increase of production of the rare breeds ensures their survival. And you, being no stranger to the work of the Livestock Conservancy, know that, you know, each of these breeds, we don't realize their potential in terms of what, you know, sort of, for instance, medical benefits they might have to the human race that we just haven't explored. And, you know, if we lose the breed, what else is lost? We just don't know.
And that was the first piece that really motivated me, is the fact that we're all coming together to protect these heritage and these historic breeds from extinction. And you're right, when it comes to also serving them on the dinner table, having them being served in restaurants, we're actually creating a bigger awareness so we can get more farmers, more breeders out here really becoming more involved.
Right.
And now, what inspired you to get involved with Heritage Meats?
Sure. Yeah, I'll back up just a little bit. Before I discovered Heritage Meats, I was launching a company that sort of piggybacked off of the success of our family restaurant here in Grand Rapids, which had been around since like 1949, and this was the year, 2010, and they had been closed for a few years. The owners, my family, had kind of gone into semi-retirement, but we're getting a lot of their former customers saying it's hard to find a good steak in, you know, in Grand Rapids, and, you know, we miss your steak. And so the family was kind of thinking of, you know, becoming sort of a local Omaha Steaks kind of company, and, you know, continuing to service their customers even after their, you know, restaurant had closed by providing steaks to them. And I jumped on that bandwagon and started to take the bull by the horns. And then just before I opened up, you know, our online storefront, we lost our sourcing. The butcher that had been providing the restaurant with their meats had closed or was closing. And so I began to search for another product, and I was calling out to Nebraska and Colorado and just following up with some leads. And this wouldn't be Heritage Meat, mind you, but alongside of this, I was doing a research. I was doing some research to make a presentation on heirloom vegetables, as you kind of alluded to in the opening segment of the show, and that's where I stumbled on Heritage Meats, and I was just astounded. I mean, I felt like I had just unearthed a buried treasure. I fell in love with actually the romance of Heritage Meats. Somehow they spoke to me of a not so distant past when, you know, life was simpler and people enjoyed good food and a slower pace of life. And so, to be honest, that's what sold me on Heritage Meats, is their romance and their poetry, I guess. And like you, I had not tasted them in, you know, before I decided to take the company in that direction. And I guess I was a little bit afraid at first of trying some of the samples that I was getting as I started to connect with heritage farmers, and they would give me some ground beef. And I think subconsciously I was just afraid of being disappointed or afraid of trying them and thinking, this isn't that much better than what we're already eating in the conventional, you know, with conventional meats. And it was an experience of, I was working at the time, as I still do. I put in a few shifts a week at a local microbrewery, and it's a real well-known restaurant in town and out of state, and they've got a world-class kitchen back there. And anyway, so I was working back there this one particular night, and I did not bring dinner with me. So I called my wife up and I said, "Hey, there's some Highland beef in the freezer. Would you mind bringing that up to work? I'm getting kind of hungry." And so she brought it up, and you know, we got it thawed, and I had a chef throw it on the grill, and I said, "By the way, you guys, why don't you go ahead and try this stuff before me?" And they did, and they were just blown away. And then I tried it, and I couldn't believe the flavor that it had. And mind you, this was coming from a Highland cow that was harvested late in life, probably 12 or 13 years of age, which is unheard of, conventional beef industry, where, you know, you're harvesting a beef at, I would guess 12 months to 18 months of age. And that old maxim came back to me, that age imparts flavor, just like aging a scotch will give it more depth of flavor. This was certainly translated in the beef flavor that we were trying, and it just, it really did blow us away. So at first, what got me into the heritage meat industry is, you know, the romance of them and the preservation of a way of life, not just the preservation of rare breeds, but a way of life. And then what really got me excited was just how good they taste.
Well, and what you're describing is exactly what I hear from other people when I talk to them about my experience trying some of the heritage meats. And honestly, at first, I was pretty reluctant myself. And isn't that sad? We've become so detached from where our meats, where our foods come from, that as soon as we are introduced to whether it's the exact cow or the exact species, it just kind of puts this hesitation on of, oh, now I'm eating this exact animal. Whereas you're right, once you step away from whatever that stigma is that we all have going on in our minds, and we're open to trying these new types of meats, it is incredible. I mean, I don't even have words to describe what happened with my taste buds. And I know some of the folks that may be listening are going, yeah, right, CS. You know, Jeff, I'm not sure if we believe you guys, but you know what? We were skeptics, and hopefully these folks will also at least take the challenge and go out there and try, whether it's a turkey, whether it's a, you know, a cut of steak, whatever it is. I highly encourage everyone, just try it once. You know, kind of like that commercial when we were kids, you know, give it to Mikey. Mikey will try it, or whatever that Life cereal commercial was.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So even that being said, the other part of this conversation, and I'm glad you brought it up, is in regards to these are endangered animals, endangered livestock. Many of them are on the critical and on the threatened list. Mm-hmm. Yet when I first heard that people were actually serving and eating these, I went, well, wait a minute, aren't we trying to build the population up? So again, there was that disconnect, and I've been hearing the same disconnect from other people. But I like the way you address that, because the more we can get people, whether it's raising or breeding these animals or eating these animals, or for our vegetarian and our vegan friends that are out there, we still need to build up the awareness of each one of these species so they don't go extinct, so we can get people excited about them.
You know, it's, again, another irony is the number of vegetarians that kind of promote my business for me. The writers out there that are just excited about sustainable meats who just happen to be vegetarians. And then there are other people I meet that sort of cease to be vegetarians once they try this stuff. And, you know, I think about last Christmas sending a shipment out to a family I know from when I lived in Colorado. I'm based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, but I spent some time in Colorado, so I have a number of people I know back there. And, you know, this family was kind of tracking with what I was doing with Heritage Meats, and, you know, said, well, it's Christmas coming, and, you know, why don't we get some meat? And they ordered up a steak, and they ordered up some of that top shelf, what I call top shelf Highland beef, the stuff that comes from those the mature animals. And so they got the stuff, and the guy who ordered it had, you know, recently become vegan. And actually, funny enough, one of his last burgers was here in Grand Rapids at a local brew pub, and he was in town for my wedding, and he, you know, I said, oh, you ought to go to this place and have, you know, have their burger, and he had kind of a bad experience with it, and so that was one of his last burgers. And then fast forward a couple years later, he's trying it again, but this time with Heritage Meats, and said, Jeff, that was a game changer for me. We had the bun out, you know, was on the bun, we had ketchup mustard on the standby, and I do recommend trying it without the ketchup and mustard, just salt and pepper, to let the meat flavor speak for itself. And he said, yeah, we scuttled the bun, you know, and we just ate that thing like a steak. So anyways, so you find a lot of support, ironically, in, you know, in the vegan and vegetarian movements with Heritage Meats.
And some of that conversion in some cases and some of that support from the vegan and from the vegetarian communities is also on how humanely the majority of these animals are raised and processed. And I just did a wonderful interview yesterday with Carolyn from humaneitarian.org.
Sure.
And what a great conversation all around this topic of how these animals are being raised. So again, I know I don't want to stray off our topic of today, but it really is an overall movement for all of us, and it's just so exciting to be sharing all of this. And now, let's switch gears. Share with us, what is one of the greatest challenges you have faced in this industry?
Sure. It's one I still face, really, and it's, you know, it really is one of infrastructure. You know, I've been, you know, working pretty hard these past, 9 to 10 months, trying to line up sort of how to get meat from point A to point B in terms of my sourcing. There is just not a lot that's out there in terms of, you know, the transport that is willing to work with a smaller company or, you know, heritage meats are just incredibly hard to source, number one. And number two, if you can find the sourcing, how do you move them cost-effective way so that it doesn't jack up the price so much to the end user that it makes it sort of unfeasible for them to, you know, to really to jump on board. So that's a huge challenge. And in addition to that is, you know, finding outlets for all the cuts. You know, we buy the whole animal when it comes to, well, you know, beef or lamb or pork and turkey. Well, turkeys are easy. Everybody buys a whole turkey when it comes to Thanksgiving. But when it comes to beef or pork or lamb, you know, you buy the whole animal, you have to sell the whole animal to make the business cost effective. And so what do you do with the heart? What do you do with the, you know, the kidneys, the liver? How do you move that quickly enough to kind of, you know, keep the product flow going? So that's amazing. I'm sure these details are absolutely mind-numbing to, you know, to the listener, but that really is a challenge, you know, one of feasibility. And then the other one is just, you know, I'm a middleman. You know, I'm the merchant who connects these heritage farms with the consumer. And so I need to kind of build into the retail price, you know, a margin there that will allow us to do what we need to keep doing. But sometimes I think people kind of balk a little bit at, you know, what you end up paying for cut of heritage meat. And I like to remind people that there was a time when we wouldn't conceive paying more than 49 cents for a cup of coffee. I do believe that the heritage meat movement is sort of the last movement in the craft food industry. That we had coffees go through sort of the craft movement back in, what, the 80s with Starbucks, and before that there was wines underwent this, you know, the craft movement, and cheeses and beers are currently in that sort of movement right now. And so people at every point along the way adjusted to spending a little bit more for something high quality. And so I think that we're a little bit ahead of the curve in that, you know, we're introducing that $2 cup of coffee equivalent of meat. And so yeah, that's a little bit challenging too.
Well, and what we also need to keep in mind is, yes, we're paying more for this product, but like you mentioned early on, we're also getting a healthier product. And at this time where GMOs and labeling is an issue. I know I'm really proud. I live here in the state of Vermont, and, you know, woohoo, we're the first state in the nation to sign into law the GMO labeling bill. Now, granted, we're being sued by, you know, everyone out there in the giant grocery associations because they don't want to disclose. Monsanto doesn't want to disclose the chemicals that they are injecting into the seeds. And again, that's another whole conversation.
Oh, so yeah.
I won't sidetrack us on that. But what would be amazing is if there could be a way for labeling or doing some analysis and really looking at the differences between the beef or even the higher quality, or whether it's extra vitamins, minerals, whatever sure. else we're getting in the heritage breeds, if there was a way to communicate that to the consumer, because there is a movement, and especially right. with this younger millennia generation that's coming along, they're seeing the cancer rates, they're seeing the disease rates that their parents, their grandparents are going through, and wow, people are making decisions to eat organic and eat healthier. So this is so exciting for you to be, you know, really at the bottom in the middle of this wave as it's coming up, where people are realizing, you know what? What if we consume a little bit less or adjust how we're preparing our meals, but use a higher quality product? Is not only going to taste better, but it's going to keep all of us much healthier than many of the Americans and folks are around the world.
Right, and I think it's Joe Salatin that quips, you know, if you think $8 a pound chicken is expensive, then you probably haven't had cancer yet. And it's a kind of a stark sort of comment, but what he's trying to, of course, say is, you know, if we pay attention to what we put in our bodies when we're younger and as we age, there's a lot of health issues that we won't have to be spending our money on, and quality of life issues that we don't have to worry about if we're taking care of our bodies.
Exactly. And I had a Facebook post where I had made a comment about a type of organic produce that I was talking about and promoting that week. And I had a woman just very, very grumpy, and I won't recite her entire post, but okay. the essence of it was, well, not all of us can afford to eat organic. And I agree with her. Not everyone can afford to make that, but you can make choices. There are consumer purchases I prefer to give up in order to eat 99% organic because I know right. it's healthier. So I think the essence of the point that I'm trying to make is it all comes down to choices. Now, right. maybe you can't have heritage meats every single day on the table. But you know what? Even if you're replacing your meat consumption with even a half and maybe as much as 3/4, again, you're then increasing the quality of what you're putting in your body. So right. the point is people can start to make step-by-step changes. And I really think we're going to see a difference in our health, whether it's through our lifetime and even through our children's lifetime.
Right. Yeah, that does go to, you know, again, speaking of challenges, it does require a philosophical shift. I don't think it's more than two generations that we're used to eating meat every meal. I mean, you go back in history, and that's an incredibly new phenomenon that we think that we have to eat meat at every meal and have the portion sizes that we do, and we don't. But it's hard to, you know, to get out of that thinking of eating less meat, better quality meat. But that does need to happen so that it can be affordable, because the woman is right. If you have meat at every meal, then it does become quite expensive to eat well. But if you reduce the portion sizes or the frequency, you just learn to savor, I think, food a little bit better, as well as make it affordable.
Exactly, just like our ancestors did, or even when I was traveling and living over in France for a short period of time. They stop, they enjoy their meals, the stores close, the businesses close, people go home and put so much love and care into the preparation of their meals and in the consuming of their meals. And again, another whole subject for another podcast.
Oh, yeah.
As far as fast food and rushing to eat and not taking that time to just sit back and relax and enjoy the meal that you're nourishing your body with.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, or the conversation sort of went in that direction, and that's because, you know, really what I'm trying to convey through Dublin Company, which is the name of our heritage meat company, is what I'm really trying to promote and convey is sort of a return to, I think, sanity. You know, returning to a way of life that our ancestors really did enjoy, which was, as you described, you know, how the French approach their mealtime is slowing down, quality ingredients, time with other people, and Heritage Meats really embody all that. It forces us to do that. For me, that's what it's all about. And so that's why I was so glad I found, these rare breeds, is because when you buy into the rare breeds, you actually buy into an ethos, you buy into, a way of life that I think was more rewarding to the human person.
I completely agree, and I'm so glad that I was given your name and website as a referral for this podcast. So now share a story about one of your favorite moments of being in this business.
Yeah. Great question. So I love to write, and my wife sort of says, Jeff, you're spending too much time on those damn blogs. You gotta, spend more time on sales or marketing or whatever. And so I love to write, and the quarterly publication of the Bagpipe magazine, which is the publication of the American Highland Cattle Association, asked me to just kind of do a piece, a short written piece about my company. And for whatever reason, where I went was I started talking about a bike ride I took out in the Ionia State Park, is the name of the state park in Michigan, and I was getting into biking and road biking, mountain biking, things like that. This particular day, I was looking for a mountain bike trail, and Ionia, incidentally, is a name borrowed, like many names in the United States, from the Old World. It refers to a land, I think, an island off the coast of Scotland. And I was also getting into like Scottish folk music and Irish folk music at this time. So anyways, took my bike out to this Ionia State Park and was just kind of enjoying the fields, kind of this way of life that we were talking about before, a life lived in connection with nature and all that, just in drinking it all in. And really, this is out in the middle of nowhere. And, I crested a hill, and I was greeted by the sound of bagpipes. There's a guy that just practicing bagpipes on this country road, and I was just astounded by that. And it was just kind of, it just felt like a real gift. And so as I was writing this piece for the Bagpipe magazine, I was recounting the story and kind of drawing the parallel to, that feeling that I had, the gift of bagpipes in nature on this one particular Sunday felt like how I discovered Heritage Meats. It just kind of felt like it came to me as a gift. So anyways, I finished writing the piece, edited it, sent it in to the publisher, and then I walked out my front door, and there's a guy playing bagpipes a block away in this park. I was just kind of blown away. It just was a really neat moment, I can't interpret it for you, but it just felt like, it just felt like I was on the right path, I guess. And so that moment, it just felt like a moment of confirmation that, the work that I'm doing might have some significance.
Most definitely. And even though this is an audio description of what you saw and felt and went through, we can almost still hear the bagpipes just kind of playing in the background. So that's what a terrific motivation. And yes, you are definitely heading in the right direction. And on a sidebar, let your wife know that between blogging and podcasting, these are the ways to share and communicate your expertise, and it is a passive way of doing marketing. So you get to do all you want. Tell her she needs to let you just write away and share your information.
Well, thanks. I'll have her listen to the podcast. So
yes, tell her we have now called her out, and if she needs to speak with me directly, just give her my phone number.
Sounds good.
So now let's get other folks involved in this. Where and how can people go to learn more about enjoying and buying their heritage meats?
Sure. We're one of, just a few players out there who are connecting the consumer with heritage meats. If people want to, see what we have to offer, read about it, I try to keep the website content rich. I try to, talk about flavor profiles for each of the meats, how the animal is raised. I try to give, just a sense of story to the farm from which the animals are coming. So we're over at dubaandcompany.com, DUBAANDCOM. P-A-N-Y. And so, you know, certainly we are one source. Also, there's, you know, a well-known source that's been around for 13 years, I think, now is Heritage Foods USA, who also, like us, sells through an online storefront. And I had the pleasure back in October of meeting with the CEO of Heritage Foods USA, Patrick Martins, and which was a real treat too. So I think that we're pretty much the two people that provide some easy access for these delicious meats.
And I really encourage everyone who's listening to this podcast, check out Jeff's website and online storefront. He's already spelled it out, dubaandcompany.com. Plus, not only is he able to ship the heritage meats right to your home, but I was also impressed with how you are sourcing restaurants and retail stores and institutions with these rare meats as well. So, folks, let's pass the word on and let's help make a difference in this new movement of eating a healthier, slower meat. And as we're wrapping up this interview, Jeff, please share with us, what's the best way for folks to get in touch with you?
Sure. Email would be the best way, and the email address, that sort of the catch-all, would be deckhand@dubaandcompany.com. So D-E-C-K-H-A-N-D at dubaandcompany.com. And our logo, I just to make sense of that, we have a merchant ship as our logo, and that's sort of a reference to, you know, what I imagine being the vehicle through which, you know, that transported these meats from the old world back over to the new world. So kind of a tie-in with our past.
I was wondering that when I saw that image. That's exactly what it evoked in my mind. So good job on that branding.
And thank you.
And then just to remind everyone, we'll have all of these links over at heritagebreeds.org. Plus, when you're on heritagebreeds.org, you're also going to have a chance to hear many of the additional episodes we've got coming up. So, Jeff, thank you so very much for joining us today and sharing all of these amazing stories with us.
Thanks, C.S. It was a real treat.
And now, listeners, remember to head over to heritagebreeds.org to listen to additional episodes of this show. Plus, for more information and access to a directory of all the heritage breeds in the United States, go to livestockconservancy.org. And again, thank you so much for your interest in these historic breeds. We look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Thank you again for joining us today at Heritage Breeds. We hope this podcast has inspired you to learn more about the animals, breeders, and people working to save them from extinction. Visit heritagebreeds.org and livestockconservancy.org to discover more and get involved. Also, be sure to pick up a copy of the Livestock Conservancy's book, An Introduction to Heritage Breeds. This is a must-have guide for raising and saving heritage breeds. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you in the next episode.